Support for this episode comes from T-Mobile. We're a lot more than just baseball fans. We're baseball fanatics. And thanks to T-Mobile, we can stay connected to the game we love with 5G in more places. T-Mobile is your ticket to the game. So whether you're home or away, you're never far from your favorite team with America's largest and fastest 5G network. Don't get caught looking. Switch to T-Mobile, the leader in 5G today. Fastest according to OpenSignal Awards based on average speeds in USA 5G Experience Report, April 2021. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
Hey Mets fans, welcome back to Amazing Avenue Audio, the show. My name is Brian, and subbing for Chris this week is one of the co-hosts of From Complex to Queens, our minor league podcast here at Amazing Avenue, Mr. Lucas Flahos. Lucas, thank you for subbing in at the last minute here.
Oh, happy to be on the flagship program. It's been a while. Have I ever been on this one? I don't know.
The name has changed, who knows, but I'm excited to talk to you for two reasons. First of all, you don't get a chance to, in podcast form, talk about the major league club very often.
No.
So I'm excited to get your takes on that. But also, we have breaking news as we're recording, and this is stuff that you are going to be able to add some interesting context to. So we are recording this at 2:08 p.m. on Friday, the 23rd of July. It is not official yet, but it appears that the Mets have acquired Rich Hill from the Tampa Bay Rays in exchange for prospect Matt Dyer and injured, potentially out for the season, bullpen piece Tommy Hunter.
Can we talk about Tommy Hunter's Mets season for just like 30 seconds here?
Absolutely. Go for it.
Dude comes up, throws a couple fun innings, gets an RBI single, right? And then hurts himself celebrating and doesn't appear again.
And then was traded for a kind of useful piece.
It's crazy. Like, it's legendary Mets career. I think that was his first career to hit, too. He's like all pumped up on the base paths and throws out his back.
I mean, that's king shit right there. That really is. And he had a lot of fun in the post game talking about that hit, if you recall, as well.
Yes, yes.
So, yeah, good for that guy. You know, I hate to see him go. But honestly, if he wasn't going to throw another inning for the Mets this season and they brought back Rich Hill... for those that don't know, Rich Hill's Players Weekend nickname is Dick Mountain.
The greatest, yes.
So no offense to former Met Jerry Blevins, who also has had very good Players Weekend nicknames. Dick Mountain is the top there. So how do you feel about Rich Hill as a piece? I mean, I think a lot of Amazing Avenue folks, myself included, and Chris and I were texting about this earlier today, we had wanted Rich Hill on the team three-ish years ago. When he was last a free agent, or maybe two free agencies ago. And, you know, Hill seems like a guy who, I mean, I have a thing for aging lefties who throw forever, you know. And so I think that he could be a useful piece. He's not what he once was, but since the Mets have so little starting pitching, this seems like a move that, if you can criticize it, you can only really criticize it for not being a bigger, like for them not going after a bigger piece. But I don't think that this necessarily precludes that, nor do I think that it should be understated just how much they need a guy like Rich Hill who can take the ball for five innings every 5 days.
I mean, they need a literal warm body at this point because Robert Stock is hurt, Jared Eichhoff was bad and gone, so who even was left in the rotation at this point? It was pretty dire, no pun intended. I've not stolen your joke, Dave. Please don't tweet at me. it was bad. And I, from an aesthetic standpoint, I absolutely love Rich Hill, both for the nickname reasons, for the story reasons. Like, dude was practically out of ball. Not out of ball. He was, like, still in the majors, but on his way to being cast off. Tons of injury issues. He comes out and has that huge, like, cameo for Boston and then follows it up the next year. Goes to LA for a couple years and is great. I actually really liked what Minnesota did with him and Homer Bailey, where they're like, hey, neither of you guys can stay healthy, so we're going to sign both of you to fill a run rotation spot. It didn't totally work, but it was a good idea. So yeah, I'm definitely with you in that he would have been an interesting guy to pick up. a couple free agencies ago. Hell, I would have even been interested in him for this free agency. And that the Rays were interested is somewhat validating on that front, given that even if it's not always the most healthy thing for the sport, most of what the Rays do does help them win.
Yes. Yes, agreed. I know that there has been some talk about the diminishing spin rate on, I believe it's on his curveball, correct, over the past four or five starts. And I know you pulled up the StatCast data on that. So what is StatCast saying about his curveball?
Yeah, so his curveball's definitely down significantly. Like earlier in the year, I mean, his best pitch is his curveball. It's 28 to 2900 RPMs, which is pretty high up there. I mean, Seth Lugo gets into above 3K, but 28-29 is pretty high. And it dipped down 25, maybe 26 for a couple starts. He actually got it back up two starts ago to around 2700. But it was back down again on the 18th, so who knows? He's seen smaller but still noticeable dips in his slider, though he hasn't thrown it as nearly as much. Fastball is much flatter. I mean, it's a lot harder to draw statistical conclusions from relatively minor dips. Guys on Twitter like Max Bay have talked a lot about how it's you need a reasonable sample size and a fairly large difference to like conclusively say that this is real, not just a random fluctuation, but it is down. So the evidence is there that he's potentially a goop guy. Now, on the other hand, it is Rich Hill, right? Rich Hill is nothing if not injury prone. Who knows whether he's dealing with something significant. He's also a guy who's dealt with significant blister issues in his career. So maybe he just has a couple of bad blisters right now. That have coincidentally been timed with MLB's ban of goop. So you can't conclusively say what's happening here. There's some evidence that suggests that his spin rates might have been linked to just, the ball isn't sticky anymore. But we'll see what happens over the next couple starts, see if it rebounds at all.
Do you feel like, how can I say this in a way that isn't totally obvious? Like, do you think that, I mean, it has to be said that Rich Hill, for even three or four starts at a slightly below average major league clip, is more valuable than an injured Tommy Hunter and Matt Dyer, right?
Oh, this is a joke of a trade. I truly don't understand how the Mets got this deal. Look, the Rays work in mysterious ways, but they're not infallible, and they do stupid stuff sometimes, and they just traded for Nelson Cruz. Maybe the $600,000 they're saving in this deal, which is all they're saving from the math that I've seen, is necessary, right?
Like, right.
They work on pretty razor-thin margins. Again, not healthy for the sport. We could have a much longer discussion about why the Rays are bad, but it's possible that their mandate from ownership really is that tight, and they need to save $600K. At the same time, they also have, unlike the Mets, a ton of arms they could call up, right? Like the guys they traded for Nelson Cruz, they just traded Joe Ryan for Nelson Cruz. Joe Ryan would probably be like the fourth starter on the Mets right now, and they traded him away for a 47-year-old or however old Nelson Cruz is. Feels
right,
like
yeah.
300 DH, right? But they can throw out Luis Patino. They can throw out Shane Baz if they want to do something crazy. They have other guys they can, that I'm failing to pull out of my head right now, but tons of other guys they can turn to, right? They have the depth to say, hey, maybe Rich Hill is bad now. Our young guys might be better anyway, and we're a poverty franchise, so we need that $600K back. Please take Rich Hill.
Yeah, I mean, if that's the case, and the Mets, you know, for the first time in a long time, don't have to worry about every dollar right now. And so it's a good fit in that way. Let's talk about Matt Dyer for a second. So, you know, I am somebody who keeps abreast of Mets prospects, but not as closely as you and the other From Complex to Queens folks do. And this is a relatively new acquisition. You know, he's a 2020 drafter. Fourth round, I believe, last year,
yes,
correct?
Yes, yes.
He's a catcher who doesn't seem to be able to catch or hit that well.
Correct.
Is that an accurate assessment of that?
That is an accurate assessment. Description of Matthew Dyer, yes.
Okay, so what would you see as Dyer's upside?
Double A shuttle catcher. Look, the dude's not. Catchers are weird. Patrick Mazeika has gotten major league time, has gotten major league starts as a catcher, which, I mean, we sure as hell didn't see coming. And so, unlike some other spots on the field, I can't, like, outright say this dude would never have reached the majors or something, but I don't see a major league player here. So it wasn't as extreme as the 2019 draft when they were cutting hard to fit in Matthew Allen, but the Mets did cut pretty hard with their last couple picks in order to squeeze in JT Ginn, who they gave $1.5 million over slot in the second round. Now, most of those savings did come from Anthony Walters in the third, who is also not a prospect, but Dyer was $150K under slot roughly. And really, the Mets got a non-prospect at that spot. This is actually a topic we've covered a bit on the minor league pod, where 2 years running and now 3 years with Rocker, the Mets have been one of the teams that's going hard at the top of the draft and then cutting bonuses with the rest of their picks in order to save money. And despite that, despite the fact that they're getting their pick of the senior signs or the mediocre junior signs, which is what Dyer was, they haven't really been hitting on actual prospects, and Dyer definitely looks like a miss in that front.
You know, the whole idea of going big at the top of the draft, and I know that this is a big conversation we could spend a long time talking about, but just real briefly, it seems like that is a very logical move, because baseball is so luck-based when it comes to what prospects pan out and don't, and there's never great data on people coming into the draft. You know, there's so many question marks. It seems like if you can go after a Kumar Rocker, you take that guy every time. Do you see any sort of like organizational deficits in a couple of years because of this?
So
way going about things?
I think they already have deficits that have been that were there from previous draft, more traditional drafting methods, right? Because frankly, the Mets haven't spent a ton on scouting or amateur acquisition relative to other teams, and they don't do a good job in these middle rounds typically, right? Weirdly, even before they went with this go hard at the top cut later, the Mets very much were hitting at the top of the draft and then getting nothing else, right? They were getting, I mean, Michael Conforto, Brandon Nimmo, Dominic Smith, Pete Alonso's a second round pick. Like, all these guys are first round picks that have hit to what, but like our actual prospects, and then the rest of their drafts have been poor to awful. And it seems they leaned into that even more under Brody Van Wagenen and now back under Sandy. But really the deficits we're seeing in the minor league system now, it existed even before they started doing these sorts of cutting things. And again, if you're going to be dipping into the senior sign pool before everyone else, you should be able to get a couple actual prospects out of it. And that they haven't is an indictment more of their scouting department or their lack of expenditure there, what have you, as opposed to an indictment of the strategy as a whole. And as much as we criticize the Rays, they do pay their scouts slightly more, right? They've said, hey, the marginal cost of paying all our scouts more is less than actually running a major league payroll. So our farm system is always elite, and we can always have a $50 million roster.
That's really interesting. I hadn't thought about the fact that the minors were already, I mean, obviously the Mets minor league depth has not been great for the last couple of years, but I didn't think about it in the sense that even before they started going big at the top, that was a problem. Mm-hmm. Again, we can have a much longer conversation about why that is the case. But
I mean, if you go back 3 or 4 years, you go back five, that far into the draft, those are the players who should now be your upper minors depth guys. Mm-hmm. And those drafts sucked, so they don't have anyone. Like the deficits now are not really a product of the most recent drafts. The MLB draft is a slow burn relative to other sports, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that people are talking about the possibility of Rocker playing for the Mets in 2022 or 2023
yeah,
shows, and that being the exception, shows you how slow of a burn it is. Whereas in basketball or football, mm-hmm. you know, they'd be up the start of next season, no matter what.
Right, and that's at the top of the draft, right? It's a slow burn at the top of the draft. It's even a slower burn in all the later rounds,
of course,
right? And that they've missed in those later rounds a couple years back is what's causing the problems now.
Now, looking ahead to the rest of this trade deadline, obviously, I think the Mets need help in a couple of areas. Where would you focus your attention? Like, for me, my order probably goes another starting pitcher, another bullpen piece, and then probably a second bullpen piece. I think offensively the team's going to be okay. Mm-hmm. I am concerned about the pitching. Where do you see your – where would you focus your attention if you were in charge?
So I think for me, I definitely – I mean, I'm kind of the opinion that this team is probably good enough to win the division as is, because the division is a disaster. And then the playoffs are – then there's a two-sided coin of the playoffs are random, and also this team isn't, like, good enough to merit, like, significant rental expenditures. So anything I'd be looking to do would also be something that would help the team in 2022. So I, rather than focusing on a specific position, I'm almost looking at guys with control as opposed to fixing specific spots. Largely because I think every spot could be upgraded, right? They could use a real third baseman. They could use more pitching, both in the bullpen and in the rotation. I think I don't know that it's actually been floated as opposed to just nonsensical Mets Twitter rumors, but the idea of trading for both Josh Donaldson and Jose Berríos in one move is one that makes a lot of sense to me, right? Like, there's your third baseman for the next couple of years, even if the last year of that contract's going to be ugly. Donaldson still hits a ton and plays a pretty good third base. Berríos would be very much like acquiring Marcus Stroman with a year of control. Solid, like, mid-rotation, maybe a number two starter if you squint. And the Twins sure are bad. Like, I could see, if the Twins call you up and say, yeah, we really like Ronnie Mauricio, and you can go get Jose Berríos and or Josh Donaldson, I think that's something you consider pretty strongly.
Do you think that is close to what the return would likely be asked for?
It's gotten harder in recent years to, like, predict deadline acquisition costs, I feel like. It's so often, like, you'll be bantering around ideas, and you're like, there's no way they move them for that little, and then guys get moved for what feels like nothing at all. So
right.
who's to say? Like, I think that's a pretty fair package. It wouldn't surprise me if there are major league teams who argue that that's too much to give up, that giving up someone of Mauricio's caliber is too much to give up given Donaldson's money. I don't think I agree with that. I'm also much lower on Mauricio than a lot of people. I'd certainly rather take that route than trade for, say, Chris Bryant, Trevor Story, both of whom I think are very good players and who I'd love them to sign in the offseason, but sign them in the offseason and trade your prospects for something you can't get with just money, right?
Like, sure, yeah.
There's no reason you can't trade for, let's just say, for the sake of argument, you just trade for Berríos right now with Mauricio, and you wait a couple months, and that helps you this season for sure. Maybe you make a couple smaller bullpen acquisitions, and then you go out and sign Chris Bryant as opposed to also trading something significant for Chris Bryant. Like, to me, that just makes more sense.
I think that makes a lot of sense. I think especially looking at guys who could help you next year is big. My one note on the playoffs, though, is I think that, you know, my statement here is about to be a lot of what ifs, so I'm just warning you, this get-go here. If DeGrom is healthy for the playoffs, which I think this injury is minor enough that that's likely, or at least possible.
Mm-hmm.
If DeGrom is healthy for the playoffs and Stroman and Walker are pitching at about what they've been pitching now, I don't know how many other teams have a top three as strong as those three in the playoffs.
See, I mean, that's definitely a fair point. I mean, the Dodgers have their own injury issues. I still think the Giants are mostly fool's gold outside of, like, Kevin Gausman being amazing. The Padres are probably very good, but might not get past the wild card round because that's what happens in random one game playoffs. So
exactly.
Look, I'm not ruling out the, I was actually toying with writing an article about this, that there's a trade-off that I think is largely based in what you care about as a fan, right? And I think I lean more towards, I don't want to push chips in unless I'm pretty confident I can get to the World Series and win it. I don't really want to try to just make the playoffs and hope. But there's definitely an argument that you should always just try to make the playoffs and hope, because it's random and it's fun. And I think those arguments are definitely all totally justifiable. And it really comes down to a matter of what you as a fan want to see, right? Is it, at least in my mind, it's more painful to go to the playoffs and lose than it is to not go to the playoffs. But I might be weird in that aspect, that respect.
I mean, I definitely understand that. I don't know if I agree. It's so hard for me to make a call about that, because on one hand, I feel like, the Mets have not made the playoffs that many times in my 39 years of existence.
No, it's absolutely a fair argument.
You know, but I do understand what you're saying. I just think that the Mets have, to me, the teams that go far in the playoffs oftentimes have two things, and that is really, really good starting pitching and then just dumb luck. And yeah. I feel like this season has had a lot of Mets dumb luck so far. So not that you can quantify that or anything like that, but I think you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah, no, it's like they've dumped all their bad luck aspects into their injury luck, and then on the field random stuff keeps happening, though I think they're still actually well under their base runs expectations. Like, their sequencing has still been really bad, but no, they have no right winning a couple of the games they've won, that's for sure.
Well, that transitions us nicely into talking about the series in Cincinnati a little bit. The less said about the series in Pittsburgh, the better.
We don't, yeah, let's
but,
not.
But in Cincinnati, I mean, that Monday night game was among the dumbest games I remember watching as a baseball fan.
Yeah, it's like brain rotting.
Yeah, it was absurd, but they won 15-10. Somehow in the 11th inning, based on a Kevin Pillar bomb. But, you know, it's a the game on Tuesday, I think, is actually a really, really interesting game to look at. They lost Robert Stock after one inning pitched. And they basically, they lost the game, but they hung in the entire time with about as little major league pitching talent as you could use to get through that game.
Yeah,
minor prospect churn at the major league level with Steven Nogosic and Yency Diaz. And, you know, I was with my brother all week. He's in town from Arizona, and he's a huge baseball fan, so we watched a lot of baseball together. And he said, you know, that's kind of the worst game possible for the Mets, because if you knew you were going to lose that game and Stock comes out in the first inning, well, then you could have let, you know, Jeff McNeil pitch seven innings. It doesn't matter, right? Like, you don't waste the bullpen, and it's fine. And I understand where he's coming from with that, but also you have to respect the team that doesn't just give up in that scenario. But the whole series was kind of fascinating in a lot of ways. I think it shed light on what the Mets need right now, what the Mets have going for them right now. I just find it to be a very, very interesting series to look back upon.
I mean, absolutely. I mean, it helps that Great American? Great American.
Great
Ballpark,
American,
right?
Yes. Yeah,
yeah. Is a clown-ass stadium.
Yes, it is.
Like, that Luis Guillorme home run, which I think was actually on Wednesday.
It was.
Who can remember? Had no business getting out of the ballpark. Neither did that Jonathan Villar home run, which I think was also Wednesday,
yes.
Right? Like, it is a stupid ballpark, which leads to games like this, which are good fun for sure. Series like these, which are good fun when you're winning them. And it also helps that the Reds bullpen is just about as bad as the Mets bullpen.
Right.
Weirdly, they're like vastly different in terms of the actual results. I think the Mets are like 3 runs better in terms of their bullpen ERA, but on talent at the moment, it sure feels like they're pretty similar. And it sure felt like they were pretty similar throughout this entire series.
It really did. It was a weird, weird, weird series. Mm-hmm. Now, is there one of these guys that pitched over the last week, the guys that keep getting called up and sent down and DFA'd and all that, is there one of those guys that you would identify as, okay, this is the guy the Mets should, if not keep up at the major league level, at least invest some resources in, at least make part of the plan going forward? You know, is there one person that stands out to you?
I mean, I like Yency Diaz a little bit. I think he is the certainly the most notable prospect of the ones they've been cycling through. Like, Nogosic isn't a prospect anymore at this point. who else even has there been? Has Tropiano pitched? I know he's been called up a couple times. Diaz, though, seems to me like the most interesting arm here. He was someone they acquired from the Blue Jays as part of that Steven Matz trade. And his minor league and major league line is pretty interesting this year. It's like much higher strikeouts than we've seen previously, but also a lot more or a good deal more walks. They've kind of shifted him from being a starter to working out of the bullpen exclusively. But there was a recent article, or maybe it was just a Twitter thread, about how guys with high strikeouts and high walks work better as relievers, right? When you bring them into a clean inning, you're just trying to avoid contact. And ultimately, walks are less good than any sort of hit. So you can live with high walks if you've got a high strikeout guy. And right now he's running an 11K9 in AAA with almost 5 walks per 9. Now, I don't think that means he's going to be a shutdown reliever or anything, right? Like the guys, Alex Reyes is succeeding like this, but he's almost certainly the exception rather than the rule. It just means he's more interesting than Negosek or any of these other retreads that the Mets are running out there right now. Hartlieb. What the hell is a Goff Hartlieb? I don't know.
I concur.
That was one of those claims, and like I think most of us who do this kind of stuff have a deeper awareness of other teams' rosters than most casual fans. But that was someone who was like, "Who is this? Never heard of this guy before."
I legitimately never heard of that player, and then his name is. You would think with a name like Gottlieb, I would have remembered that guy. Uh-huh. But I instantly forgot they claimed him, and then we called him up and said, wait a minute, who?
Who is this guy again?
So yeah. I forgot. I didn't know he existed. I learned he existed, and then I forgot he existed all in like one fell swoop.
Yes. So, yes. I mean, the 2021 Mets, everyone.
Yes, that is about as 2021 Mets as I think you can get right now.
Apparently, as I Google it, he was on the Pirates' top 30 prospects in 2018 on Fangraphs. You learn something new every day.
There we go.
Thanks to T-Mobile for supporting this episode and for keeping baseball fans around the country connected to the game. Because when you're on America's largest and fastest 5G network, you get more than great coverage. You get to stay close to your favorite team, whether you're at home or on the road. In other words, T-Mobile is your ticket to the game. Make the switch to T-Mobile, the leader in 5G today. Fastest according to Open Signal Awards based on average speeds and USA 5G experience report, April 2021. See 5G device coverage and access details at tmobile.com.
This is advertiser content from Facebook.
Hi, I'm Taylor. I work at Vox Media, and I found my dream couch from Made in Home thanks to a personalized ad on Instagram. So summer of 2019, I moved from LA to New York, super excited to start my New York dreams. And then the following spring, COVID hit and everything went downhill. And so I returned to my family home thinking that it would be for 2 weeks, and it turned into months. I just so desperately want to get back to having an adult life, having my adult life. So I was scrolling through Instagram looking for inspiration for the perfect pieces for my dream New York apartment. And then I came across an ad for a Made in Home. I saw a sofa that I really liked, so I clicked on the ad to learn more, and I really appreciated that it came from a small business that focused on local artisans in North Carolina. Searching for and finding pieces like this has really made me so excited to get back to New York. So I'm really glad I came across this ad on Instagram, and I can already imagine myself on this couch in my new apartment.
Good ideas deserve to be found. Personalized ads help you find them. Discover the next good idea and support small businesses on Facebook and Instagram. Visit facebook.com/supportsmallbusiness to learn more.
All right, well, this is sort of our last topic today. And again, you are a good person to talk to about this. You know, a number of weeks ago now, there was a lot of discussion about the Mets and just in minor league baseball in general, but specifically the Mets not treating their minor league players as well as they should. And this came to light specifically because of, you know, the Mets' new ownership. And it's great to have Steve Cohen as owner because they can take money on at the deadline in the way that they couldn't in the past. And he seems like he's a legitimate Mets fan and wants the team to succeed. And, you know, we can say nice things about Steve Cohen, but when you have that much money and your minor leaguers are living in squalor, it's hard to get too excited about your ownership. And so he had promised that he was going to have a comprehensive plan to discuss minor league living situations and compensation, etc. That plan has not come out yet, but there has been some information, I believe, initially leaked by the mother of a Mets minor leaguer, if I'm not mistaken, that says that the Mets are starting to make some improvements here. Mm-hmm. How real do you think these improvements are, and do you think that Cohen will eventually get to a good place, or is this just doing the bare minimum sort of just as lip service for saying, look, I'm doing something. See how much I'm doing right here.
Yeah, I think it's really hard to say for right now. And at the risk of being called a billionaire bootlicker or something, I'm willing to give Steve Cohen at least a little bit of benefit of the doubt when he came out and said like this was something they were still looking at. I think he got criticized a little bit too much initially when this was first coming out. I don't think Steve Cohen is the kind of owner who's really meddling in everything. If it was Jeff Wilpon saying, yeah, I had no idea my minor leaguers were suffering like this, he'd be like, okay, sure, buddy.
Right.
But Cohen seems much more like a hands-off owner. He's just here to have a good time and enjoy owning a Met team. And look, if he became aware of this, addressed it, and we see meaningful changes, I'll give him credit for doing something that, even though it's the bare minimum and something that every organization should do, is something that no organization actually does. So if it turns out that they make meaningful changes and make these guys' lives meaningfully better or easier, good for them. At the moment, I don't know that we can definitively say whether that's happening. And even if they do make some improvements, it could very well be more PR wins as opposed to the meaningful but extremely affordable changes that could be made here to fix this system. We actually did a whole show on this last off season, or maybe it was in the COVID break last year, where we did like a very back of the envelope calculation of how much it would cost to provide housing and better meals and financial training and language training, like all these sort of things that minor leaguers could use. And it's the cost of like a middle reliever for a huge competitive advantage, let alone the moral argument for doing so. So I'm not sure what he's done so far. I'm afraid to say that it'll probably wind up being less than what it should be, but hopefully it's something that at least means these guys can subsist off something other than peanut butter and jelly sandwich three times a day and don't have to live 6 to an apartment.
That would be a very small victory for just, you know, we shouldn't even have to talk about that.
Ludicrous.
It's insane, but if that can happen, that's better than what's happening right now.
I mean, and it's also, I mean, here's the other point is that if four idiots who do a minor league podcast on the weekend can do some back of the envelope math here and find that this costs nothing, I can assure you that major league organizations have done the same analysis and said, man, if we just treated our minor leaguers better, think about how much better our prospect development would be, how much easier it would be to attract minor league free agents, how much easier it would be to sign draft picks or IFA dudes when they know they're going to a system that cares about them, right? All of these would vastly improve your talent development pipeline at the cost of one middle reliever per year, which is what? Half a war, something
right?
Like the idea that making these sorts of systematic changes isn't cost effective is insane, and the idea that major league teams haven't done this math and seen the same thing is also insane, which implies that there's definitely a mandate from the league not to do this. So who knows what's actually going on behind the scenes, and hopefully Steve Cohen winds up telling them to go screw, I'm an owner now, I'm going to do what I want, but I'm not holding my breath for that.
Yeah, I mean, I think we can all hope that, I mean, don't forget, the owners didn't want Steve Cohen necessarily to buy the Mets for a couple of reasons, but I don't think it was because of his socialist values, right?
I don't think that's a major concern for $12 billionaire hedge fund owner Steve Cohen.
Right, so I don't think that he's necessarily doing this for the people. I think that, you know, if somebody can convince him this is a solid financial move, or if they can convince him this will get him good PR, I think those are the reasons he'll do it, not because like he changed his mind about, you know, the evils of capitalism.
No, that's definitely the argument that would work on Cohen. Like, hey, this will pay for itself. Oh, hedge fund manager finds good investment opportunity? Yeah, you bet he'll be more open to that argument than, oh, this is the right thing to do.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Lucas, we always do a music recommendation on this show. You said this was going to be hard for you. Is that because you don't listen to a lot of music, or what? What is sort of your relationship with music?
So I'm not a huge music guy. I grew up as like a competition violinist, weirdly enough, but I've never been huge into listening to music. That said, I do have a recommendation that's maybe a little different than what you usually dish out on,
which is
on
great.
This show. So I'm not a big music guy, but I do play a lot of games, and a lot of video games do actually have really excellent soundtracks these days. So if you're a metalhead into that kind of sound, I would highly recommend going to listen to the Doom Eternal soundtrack. It's written by Mick Gordon. I would describe it as like metal without guitars, and it slaps. Like, I'm not going to go into a long spiel about what the game is, but it's really great motivational music to like work to. And it's just fun to listen to in general.
Well, that sounds like a really fun suggestion. There appears to be a playlist on Spotify that is the Doom Eternal soundtrack. So
yep, that's that. I mean, I'm sure many of the, how to say this politely, maybe older listeners are more familiar with the original like 8-bit Doom soundtrack, right? But
I am familiar with that soundtrack, yes.
Yeah, excellent. I assure you that this soundtrack is much more sophisticated and refined than that.
Okay. I will take your word for it. So my pick this week is a slightly strange one as well, but I think that listeners of the show, if anyone pays attention to the music selections in the show, I think you will note that I oftentimes pick a very strange album. So I'm picking a compilation today. It came out on a label called Light in the Attic Records, which does great work in releasing like these albums that kind of give a glimpse into a scene or a style of music. And so there is this whole style of music, and I'm going to butcher this, called Canchio Ungato. No, I fucked that up so badly. Canchio Ungaku. It's called Japanese environmental music, and it's basically ambient music that is meant to just play in the background. It's just meant to be like, to make your room a more pleasant room, you put this on.
You've actually piqued my interest with this description, I have to admit.
Yeah, so it's kind of like ambient music, kind of new agey, but it's all really just beautiful, pleasant music. And like, if you need something when you're doing some work, or you're just like coming, last night I got home at like 10:30 from work, and I was eating a shitty fast food dinner that I picked up on the way home because there was no food in my house, and I just put this on, and it just calmed me down, and it was a really like nice, quiet way to end the evening. So it's I'm gonna link to it. I don't want to mispronounce it again, but the subtitle of it is Japanese Ambient Environmental and New Age Music, 1980 to 1990. It's just 10 songs. It's really, really nice and pleasant, and it's just something different than what you might be listening to day in, day out. So,
you know, I don't think we could have recommended more different sounds. I gave someone like a heavy duty FPS game metal soundtrack, and you're recommending calm, peaceful Japanese ambient music.
Hey, that's fun though.
So here's an experiment for you listeners. Why don't you like interweave the album and monitor your heart rate as it goes up and down between different songs? Tweet at us with that image.
Yes, please do that. Well, Lucas, thank you for sitting in on the show this week. It was a lot of fun having you on.
Thank you for having me.
And as always, go to AmazingAvenue.com for all of your Mets needs. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Amazing Avenue. This show and all of our Amazing Avenue podcasts, including From Complex to Queens every Monday morning on Amazing Avenue, can be found on Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. Lucas is on Twitter at elvlajos343. His display name is Janeshwi Fargus fan, so my apologies for his DFA. I am on Twitter at Brian Itzenapp, and until next time, let's go Mets.
Support for this episode comes from T-Mobile. We're a lot more than just baseball fans. We're baseball fanatics. And thanks to T-Mobile, we can stay connected to the game we love with 5G in more places. T-Mobile is your ticket to the game. So whether you're home or away, you're never far from your favorite team with America's largest and fastest 5G network. Don't get caught looking. Switch to T-Mobile, the leader in 5G today. Fastest according to OpenSignal Awards based on average speeds in USA 5G experience report, April 2021. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.